search by certification number, search by firm's name, search by code, and that includes NAICS, NIGP, or ODOT, or search by keywords that will be found in capability descriptions. So even if a firm is assigned the wrong code, you still get a comprehensive list by doing a keyword search. Did I miss anything? I don't think he did. Clearly searching by the NIGP code alone is leaving out the majority of NWESB firms for the bidding process and thus opportunities. A perfect example is Gonzales Boring Tunneling. The city has always accepted and recognized Gonzales Boring Tunneling as an MBE firm by searching by code alone. His firm is now excluded. For the sake of the good faith effort program and the integrity of the bidding process, please require all bidders to comply.
Mr. Asbeck, since you're the attorney for the client, can I just make sure I understand your position? Your position is that the winning bidder had a non-responsive bid because they haven't demonstrated that they contacted five MWESB subcontractors?
They didn't contact five MWESB in the hazmat removal category and the drilling and boring category, and plus the MWESBs who showed up at the at the pre-bid conference. And for drilling and boring, two people showed up at the pre-bid conference. They contacted those two people plus two more, but not five more.
So this may be very clear to you, but just so that it may be of help to us, what is your understanding of the contact requirement?
My understanding of the contact requirement is they have to make a phone call, they have to send a fax.
Okay. And
there's no contest that they didn't contact any.
Okay.
The right number.
Is your argument that there can't be substantial compliance if there was no contact with any?
My argument is there can't be substantial compliance if there are a significant number of if there are a significant number of MWESBs, 10, for instance, for hazmat removal and 11 for drilling and boring, and you only contact two for hazmat removal and four for drilling and boring. When you're told it's five plus whoever shows up at the pre-bid conference.
And my final question, sir, is the requirement that there be five contacts that you said was stated at a pre-bid conference. Was that?
Well, it was written in the RFP.
It was in the RFP?
It was written in the request for proposal, and it was emphasized at the pre-bid conference.
Thank you.
So that was helpful, but it still hasn't got me to the place where I have my arms around the issue. So is your concern that Cascade, Mountain Cascade, did not contact five minority women, emerging small business subcontractors, or does that extend into who they actually subcontracted with?
No. Our concern is that everybody was told, both in the RFP and at the pre-bid conference, that you had to contact five MWESBs in each category that you were not going to self-perform. And Mountain Cascade did not contact five plus whoever showed up at the pre-bid, plus any MWESBs who showed up at the pre-bid conference. Mountain Cascade did not contact five in the drilling and boring category and five in the hazmat removal category, plus...
Are you one of the subcontractors?
I am not one of the subcontractors. I am counsel for the second low bidder.
Second low bidder, but I guess I'm trying to get to where you're.
The subcontractors are here to testify that weren't contacted and didn't have a chance to bid on this job.
But is this an attempt by you then to have another opportunity to bid? Is that the upshot of what your objection is?
Well, It's the upshot of our objection is my client did it right. We ought to be awarded the project, or the project ought to be rebid, and the city ought to make clear what the standard is, because
So you're not disputing that they hired minority women or emergency small business contractors. You're disputing the number of people they contacted.
Right, but that's what the rules are. There is.
Okay.
There are no requirements to hire anybody. The requirements are to make the contacts. Everybody else made these contacts. Mountain Cascade didn't. The city says it's okay that they didn't in these two categories because there are only a small number in the two categories, but in fact there are 10 in the hazmat removal category and 11 in the drilling and boring category.
But if they'd have contacted the right number of...
Then we wouldn't be here complaining.
It wouldn't have necessarily changed their bid.
It wouldn't have. It wouldn't have, Commissioner, but...
But it's a technical
violation. But it is a violation of what everybody was told.
Gotcha. Okay.
Mr. Asbeck, just one last question. You said that some of the folks who could have been subcontractors who weren't contacted are going to testify today. Is it your understanding they're going to testify simply that they were never contacted?
They're going to testify that they were never contacted and that they're MWESBs.
And is that in dispute in any record?
No, I don't think it's in dispute.
So, I mean, do we need to have everyone say that, or is that something that the city acknowledges?
If I may, I don't think the city acknowledges that, because the city is making the claim that there's only 5 state-certified drilling and boring contractors, therefore they were not required to contact 7, which is totally false. And if you go into hazardous material removal, they are claiming there's only 3 state-certified firms, one of which does not perform this type of work, and therefore they only needed to contact the 2, which is, again, false. There is 10 state-certified firms, and they did not list a firm.
So I thank you for your testimony. I'm actually, with the council's permission, I'm going to bring staff back after this panel to sort of get a little bit of the back and forth up front that might shape how we move forward. Did you have
I can ask the staff that question.
Okay. So thank you for your testimony. Please stick around. So you heard some of the issues raised. I'd like to give you an opportunity to respond.
Sure. Jim Van Dyke, City Attorney's Office. I just want to take a second and take us back to the Good Faith Effort Program, because I've been involved in its inception for the past 15 years. I drafted the specifications for it. I've helped in the revision of the Good Faith Efforts specification, and I've counseled the Bureau of Purchases for the last 15 years regarding whether people meet that standard or not. So here's the program. The program is, we wanted to make sure that minorities, women, and emerging small business got opportunities to work on city projects. That's the purpose of the program. Okay, that's all there is to it. What the city does is we try to identify discrete subcontracting areas where those opportunities might exist.
Can I interrupt you for one second?
Sure.
Is there some mandate that we do that? Or is this a program the city's initiated?
This is a city-initiated program, which really arose out of the disparity study back in the 1990s, where we tried to figure out ways to assist minority women and emerging small businesses get contracts and subcontracting opportunities with the city. So we developed this program to require prime contractors to contact.
I could interrupt. As the policy manager for the project, working with Sue Clobertantz and others, it was in lieu of the Croson disparity study at the time showing we could not do set-asides. So all we could do is require effort.
Okay.
We could not require set-asides.
Because the law doesn't say you must hire 10% minorities, 5% women. Mm-hmm. So since we can't do that, in the absence of a valid disparity study, and our sheltered market program was validated by that. But the Good Faith Efforts program applies in those other areas where the disparity study didn't let us do that. So we said, we want to give you folks the opportunity. So we try to identify in our contracts those areas where subcontracting opportunities might exist. And I want to hand this exhibit out to council because I think it'll show you. And this is just one page of a good faith effort specification. And you can see when you get your copy at the bottom of the page that on this particular bid, because it's such a large contract, there must be 15 or more discrete divisions of work that we say, here are the subcontracting opportunities. Now, if you're going to perform that work yourself as a prime contractor, say you're going to do any asphalt paving, you don't need to start going out and contacting subcontractors when you're going to do the work yourself with your own forces, because we're not going to make you jump through those hoops. But where you are going to subcontract it out, we really want you to go out and talk to, give opportunities to minority women and small businesses. We ask them to contact them ahead of the bid, both by fax and to give them a follow-up phone call just to make sure that they don't miss their opportunity. Okay, that's what we do. Now, we also say we'd really like you to contact, we want you to contact five MWESB subcontractors in each of the categories that you're going to subcontract out. Okay, we want to make sure there's just not a half-hearted effort. We really want to reach out. Okay, and so that's what... And so that's what we do. And we also say, you know, if some of these subcontractors are pretty savvy, they show up at our pre-bid conferences. And we say, contact them too. So sometimes you might have to contact more than five.
And is there a list of qualified minority women in emerging small business?
And that's the point I want to get to. If you'll see on this, and I highlighted this, what we do is we send bidders to the state website, the Office of Minority and Emerging Small Businesses. And we tell them these contractors are listed by a code that corresponds to the work they do. Okay, so here, asphalt paving is code 91395. So we tell prime contractors, go to the website, plug in this number, 91395, and see who's listed there for asphalt paving. Okay, and that's what we direct them to do.
And is there some sanctity to that particular list? Is it recognized as
it's the state? It's the official state list because the state certifies. There's certified minority businesses, certified women businesses, certified emerging small businesses, and to be certified, you can't make above a certain amount of money every year. You have to be, if you're a minority business, you have to be more than 50% owned by a minority owner.
But I guess, I mean, there's not some other competing list. There's
no
confusion about where you go.
This is where you go. This is the only place you go. This is the only place you go.
In some of these categories, the state licenses and certifies. So that's another,
yes.
You have to be licensed for some of these professions.
Right. There's a different arm of the state, the Construction Contractors Board, that licenses these people. But we don't search by licenses. We search by the code. And as you can see, our specifications specifically tell the contractors search by NIGP code, which is the code they're given. Okay. Now, as you can see on a project this size, the amount of paperwork that you get in and the number of contacts they have to make can be quite substantial. And I think I think there's a disagreement on how many folks that the low bidder contacted. I had them contacting over 100 minority women in emerging small businesses. I think the folks from Moore thought they only contacted 84, but even so, that's a substantial amount of businesses that you contact. Okay, so let's go back. They're supposed to contact five in each of these categories.
Now, one second, Jim. So the 100, over 100 or 84 is across,
that was just
across
a,
the 10?
That was just a total of all the different categories. So I just wanted to give you
an... Work.
We had 20.
20, okay. Yeah.
So I'm just giving you kind of an overview of all the stuff that they had to do. So what we say to them is make sure you contact at least five. The part of the specs you don't have says if you don't find five in that category, contact them all. All right, because sometimes there aren't, you know, five in a particular category. So what happened here is Mountain Cascade was not perfect. It missed a couple. We found it only contacted four minority, emerging, and women small businesses in for drilling and boring work. Okay? We found that they only contacted two subcontractors in hazardous waste removal. Those are the only two categories of all the ones on here that anybody objects to. Those are the only two that Moore is complaining about. And they say, well, four is not five, and two is not five.
So why isn't that a good argument?
Well, because state law and our city code says you have to be in substantial compliance with our requirements. And it says it straight out. And in fact, that was their original argument in their original protest. They
said, you're saying four out of five is substantial compliance as long as you've done five out of five or more in all the others.
I look at the, when I analyze this, I look at the totality of everything the bidder had to do.
So, Jim, let's take this one step further, because I think the idea that you have to contact people is wonderful, and it may be the extent of what we can mandate. But we're also, it's probably even more beneficial if there's been a contact and a contract.
And in this case, Mountain Cascade subcontracted 34% of the contract work.
Any of them in the categories that are being objected to?
Yes. And in fact, in drilling and boring, they are proposing to award an over $8 million contract to a minority firm.
About hazmat removal?
Do you recall, Jeff, on hazmat removal, whether they're self-performing the work or subbing it out?
No, they are subbing it out to a minority business.
Okay, so they're subbing it out. Is that correct?
They're shaking their heads.
I'm looking at Mountain Cascade. They're self-performing part of it. If you're self-performing part of it,
The hazmat. But the
drilling and boring
is a.
That's correct.
Is what? Is it a minority or a women or an emerging small business?
A minority. Gonzales Boring, I believe. Northwest Boring. Okay.
Northwest Boring. It's a minority firm.
Okay. So when I looked at the totality of everything they did, and I found it was only these two categories where they had stubbed their toe. And by the way, when you look this up by NIGP code, you find in hazmat, there's only three firms listed. Okay, so I want to explain now why I'm coming up with different numbers than what you just heard from Moore. Okay, what they did is they contacted the state site, and the state folks said...
They being Moore?
Moore, and they kindly provided this to me today. And the state said, sometimes you search for a firm by code, in this case, the NIGP code. A firm you are looking for may not appear on the list. The reason for that may be the firm was assigned the wrong code. Okay. So we do not make bidders go through multiple searches of the website looking for people who have gotten the wrong code. We don't ask them to do multiple searches. They could, using anything other than this number code that we give for them. Okay. We have to cut off our efforts at some point, and so we say just look by NIGP code and go do that.
So Jim, the winning bidder was the price differential between first and second place was what again?
$700,000 something.
And the winning bidder has more proposed contracts with MWESB than the second?
That's correct. They're both good, I might add.
But
the low bidder did more. More actual participation.
In total dollars. Which is ultimately what we're trying to strive for.
We sure like to see that.
And just so I understand, the discrepancy is that the challenge before us, in part, is whether you have the authority to determine, to in effect, not waive the five firm rule, but determine whether something less than that is in, quote, substantial compliance.
That is one of the most challenging things that the Bureau of Purchases has to do.
And in this case, you're telling us that in at least one of the categories, the reason that there may be a discrepancy in the available data online is that the state did not properly code all of the qualified.
I in both of those categories. So when they were referring to there being 10 in each category, well, okay, but you couldn't find those 10 by doing it the way we asked them to do it.
If you granted the relief that's sought, what would be the cost to the city and the time frame for doing a completely new process?
Well, the cost is a little speculative, but this is a project that's tied to the big pipe project. There is an EPA deadline, and we have to get it done within the deadline. Paul Gribben is here, and he could talk to you about whether, if we rejected the bids, started all over again, and lost this construction season, you know, in a down economy, and we bid it next year, I think it's completely speculative to say whether we would get a project that we estimated to cost $40 million at $28, which is what they bid.
So I think what's really important here is to focus on this what you've characterized as a misclassification of some of these minority women and emerging small business contractors in the state system. Did you confirm that, in fact, some of these subcontractors were improperly coded?
I wasn't able to do that because I only saw their letter today. Apparently, there was a mix-up in the mail. But I take their word for it that they're, if you did multiple searches on the OMWESB website, that you would find some other folks miscoded.
Who said that? The state said that, or Mountain Cascade said that?
Actually, Moore said that they could find other people on the OMWESB website by doing other and different kinds of searches.
And that's the list they gave.
That's correct. That's the list they gave you.
But this list would have been one. And are these numbers the codes, but like American codings 2378?
I think those are unrelated codes myself.
Okay, but their point is they went through and found all these subcontractors, even if they're miscoded.
Yeah.
And that Cascade, Mountain Cascade, should have done the same.
That's what their argument is, I think.
Okay.
My argument is that's not what we asked them to do, and I don't want to change the rules in the middle of the game on them. Now, I've heard them say today that we've changed the way we analyze these. And I just have to tell you, based on 15 years of advising the Bureau of Purchases, we've never changed it. The standard has always been substantial compliance, not perfect compliance. It has always been substantial compliance. And again, that is the toughest decision to try to make, to weigh where people make mistakes.
And
we certainly prefer people not to make mistakes so we don't have to engage in this kind of analysis.
And for us non-attorneys, is substantial compliance a term of art?
Yes, the Oregon Court of Appeals has actually construed the term substantial in the state contracting, in the context of the state public contracting code, and they say you have to look at the objective that you're trying to reach in order to determine whether or not you've substantially complied. So when I look at all the different people they've contacted and the results they get and the minor omissions, I think the objective that the city was trying to obtain, which was to give people an opportunity, to give minorities, women, and emerging small businesses an opportunity to bid, I think they clearly substantially complied.
But I'm looking at your good faith effort divisions of work sheet, and it doesn't say one needs to be in substantial compliance. It does say...
Now, it's true that we don't repeat all of city code within our specifications.
That was my next question. That term is found somewhere in the code?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Now, this is,
and has been for many years.
This is one of those interesting situations where you have form and you have substance. And if we were to, it sounds to me from what you said, if we were to look past the disagreement about how you interpret the requirement and you look simply at the performance, we still have a situation where the proposed winning bidder is cheaper and they have put more dollars into contracting and the outcomes that we're trying to promote. Is that correct?
Both of those facts are true. Yes, Commissioner.
Thank you.
You know the council discussion? All right, we'll stick around. Who's next to testify?
The next three are Jim, I believe the last name is Congaley, and Perry Staten, and John Kalkoven.
Yeah, well.
What about Jim Hall?
Good afternoon. Welcome to the City Council. Glad you're here. You simply need to give us your first and last names.
My name's Jim Gonzalez.
I'm the owner of Gonzales Boring and Tunneling. I am a state certified MWESB firm, local firm, for over 25 years. My concern here today is that we need to make sure that all the general contractors follow the rules that are outlined in the bidding process. The firms must adhere to all of the qualifications. So as a minority contractor, subcontractor, I have the opportunity to bid or participate in the project for the city of Portland. At no time on this project was I ever solicited by Mountain Cascade on this project.
Did you have the right code?
Yes, I am a state certified drilling and boring contractor.
Okay.
With the correct quote, code. I was, however, solicited and helped to participate in putting together a sizable portion of work by Moore Excavation. They did give me the opportunity to participate in this project. You know, the key here is we need to have good faith effort from all the general contractors with the minority firms. Whether or not, if they needed to contact five firms, then we need to make sure that we adhere to the rules that are placed before us.
Thank you, Aaron. Did you have more?
No, that's...
Thank you, sir, very much.
I'm John Cal Coven, president of the National Utility Contractors Association of Oregon and Southwest Washington, or NUCA for short. You're being handed a letter that was originally sent to the city and the council, and I have signed by our executive person. I'm giving you another copy of it, signed by myself. As stated in NUCA's letter, NUCA feels very strongly that the city should not make exceptions in the bidding process, including good faith efforts on any job. If you're going to have the rules, then the rules should be followed. And if you're not going to follow them, then eliminate them. Now it's switching hats here, now speaking as a local business owner, not as NUCA. I take exception to what the city attorney has said. I have personally been low bidder on previous jobs to the city and have been thrown out for not following the good faith rules. So if you're going to throw me out and you've thrown out other companies, you should throw out Mountain. Thank you.
And were you thrown out because you didn't, in similar circumstances, you didn't contact enough potential subcontractors?
That is correct.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Jim Hall. I'm vice president with Moore Excavation for Operations. I know that you're going to hear a lot about this job as far as local union labor participation, local subcontractor participation. I just want you guys to realize that as a local contractor, we are going to be keeping this money in Oregon if we were to be awarded this contract. On top of that, we have over, I want to say, roughly $20 million in local participation from subcontractors, not including the self-performed work that we'll be doing. Of that, I think we're in the 30% range in our minority contractor participation. So the difference between Mountain Cascade's proposal to the city and our proposal is very insignificant. So that being said, part of my job is to manage Moore Excavation's bid submissions to the city. My job is to know exactly what I need to do to conform to your bidding requirements. And in the last 10 years, as John said, the standard for the city and the MWESB participation has been absolute. It hasn't been substantial. It hasn't been close. It's been, you will do this work. We've had an instance where a contractor that was low, we were number two, they were thrown out for noncompliance. They threw out the entire bid for noncompliance. The city is adamantly mandated in pre-bid meetings and in the documentation that you will do this. It doesn't say you can sort of do this. It says you shall do this. And Angela Pack can confirm, and purchasing can confirm, that this has been a requirement, not something that you can sort of get by. We've talked with the city before concerning if we list an MWASB contractor, do we need to go through all the requirements? If I listed a MWESB contractor for $10 million on this job, I still have to do the good faith effort as stipulated in the documents. The city has mandated that. It's not something they sort of do. That being said, as bidding contractors, we rely on those requirements to make our living, to keep our families working. The city saying now, well, you don't need to follow those rules sometimes. As Alan Kalkoven had said before, there's been bids later than the Portsmouth bid where they've said, no, you absolutely have to do this. We need to maintain the integrity of the bidding process so that all the contractors are playing under the fair rules and that we're all reviewed in the same criteria.
Thank you for your testimony.
Mr. Hall, I think you might be the right person to ask me this of. Did I understand you to say that it's your responsibility to put together all of the data for bids to the city?
That's my function.
So you would have been the one then for more construction to make sure that the minority women and emerging small business subcontractors were contacted by you to satisfy the requirements.
I manage that function, yes.
So is it accurate that in order to contact the appropriate number of subcontractors as outlined in this good faith effort, you had to go outside of the codes that identified the subcontractors and look in other codes to identify who they would be in order to satisfy the five number of subcontractors to be contacted?
In looking through the state and looking through that state list, you have to use more than just the NIGP code, I believe is what the actual code is. NAICS, the GP code, the keyword search. There's lots of contractors in there that are willing or are capable of performing other functions that don't necessarily come up in the one NIGP code that they're listed underneath.
But this does say this, and I'm assuming it's the same form that you use, that Mountain Cascade used. It says prime contractors are required to contact at least five firms plus any MWESB pre-bid attendees for each good faith effort Dow identified below. And so it actually says,
which is what it drives you
to one of those codes,
right? But in historically, the city has not used the NIGP code to determine what minority contractors
to be fair, you're being technical. You're saying, on the one hand, the city should follow its written rules, and I'm trying to point out to you that in this form, it directs contractors to use these codes in order to identify who the appropriate certified minority women or emerging small business subcontractors are. And I'm hearing you say that you have chosen to go outside of that to identify qualified subcontractors, but that is not what the form says.
In order to adhere to the MWESB solicitation requirements, we have gone and used more than just the NAIGP code. And historically, the city has not used that code.
Understood. But your basic argument is you do that, and you think that Mountain Cascade should have done that as well.
My argument is more to the fact that the city has historically required that we contact five and two, or five plus whoever comes to the pre-bid. And they've used that criteria to either find bidders responsive or non-responsive, and now suddenly the city is deciding that they can somewhat bend the rules under this situation.
Sir, I understand that argument, but just to follow up on Commissioner Leonard's point, what if you know that there aren't five active businesses in any category? Would your understanding be you contact as many as you can, up to five, assuming that there are, you know, five operational businesses that would qualify?
I think I would agree with that.
So, in fact, it might be that you could only locate two in a category because in a down economy, a bunch of people went out of business and that they're the only ones that are.
But the meter the city has always handled was, if there's three, you better contact three. In this respect, they're saying you found three, but you only contacted two. So the meter has always been by the city. The city has always held us to the highest standard. Substantial compliance has never been a question with the city in the bidding process. They have never said you can sort of comply.
Thank you, gentlemen. Good testimony. The next three, and we're going to move to 2 minutes now because we have to go into the evening and we have a long.
I think I'm the last one.
We have a whole list.
More.
Oh, okay. What are the other two?
Was Perry Staten here?
He didn't make it.
Okay, thank you. Dave Bell and Michael Grace. Come on up. They're here.
Well, these guys, they're not with me.
I understand.
Okay.
Some noted. We'll keep them back there for now.
Okay. Yeah.
Prevent anything. Mr. Moore.
Hi there. I'm Roy Moore with Moore Excavation, a third-generation contractor in the city of Portland. We've worked in the city of Portland, paying Multnomah County and city of Portland taxes for over 50 years now. Our location is located at 17090 Northeast San Rafael in Portland. We have sent you lots of information regarding the situation, and you are probably tired of hearing about it, but as an employer, I have the responsibility to the people I work with and the families to try to right this wrong. We had 160 employees for the last 10 years. At this time, we have 75. And if things don't pick up, less than that soon. This job is a City of Portland stimulus project. It is not a Livermore, California stimulus project. The real rub with this situation is that your purchasing department and Mr. Van Dyke want you to allow them to change the city policy and allow them to award this project to Mountain Cascade when they know it's not how they have administered the Good Faith Effort program as long as it has been in existence. Please make the right decision for your citizens and my employees and require your staff to follow our good faith effort program that's been in effect since the inception, not the new twist of substantial compliance. Substantial compliance means that they didn't get the job done, and your program leaves no wiggle room. This is not a term that the City of Portland has used ever until now, when it came to good faith efforts. If you can't reverse the purchasing's decision, throw all bids out and we can rebid under their new requirements.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Dave Bell, Michael Grace, and Aaron Smud.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Welcome to the City Council.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Thank you, Michael Grace, Counsel for Mountain Cascade. We will definitely endeavor to keep this brief. It certainly appears that the council has a good handle on what the issue is. But let's make it clear, from a 30,000-foot level, this is nothing more than economic self-interest, Moore's economic self-interest, disguised as confusion over the rules, disguised as concern over administration and implementation of the Good Faith Efforts program. Now, the law is substantial compliance. It was very ably explained to you by the city attorney, and in fact, that's the standard that is the law. As a result of that, the city attorney, the purchasing department, has investigated the protest and determined that Mountain Cascade did, in fact, substantially comply. Now, let's keep in mind what is the goal here. The goal is to make good faith efforts and to not only give opportunities, but to hope that those opportunities are transformed into actual contracts, actual business for minority and women emerging business or emerging small business enterprises. That clearly happened here. 75% of the subcontracted dollars from Mountain Cascade will, in fact, go to those types of firms. Aaron Smood was the lead estimator on the project. He can speak to the efforts that Mountain Cascade went to, and really more so the level of effort Mountain Cascade went to and how they take this very seriously.
Good afternoon. I was the lead estimator for Mountain Cascade as the general proposer for this project. And, you know, Mountain Cascade is very familiar with good faith effort, both within goals and requirements. We take it very seriously. From the early stages of putting together a bid, we assign a specific individual that handles those requirements, those efforts, deals with advertisements. So we don't have a lead estimator, have people that are not capable of putting forth the amount of time that it takes to solicit to that, you know, high number of people. You know, we searched for firms in the procedure that was given to us by division codes on the state website. It should be noted that the city's website at bid time was actually down. It does specifically say in the specs that you were only able to go to the state website because the city's outreach site was not available at time that advertisements had to be done. So we had one source, and we had directions to follow division codes. We made those advertisements. In regard to the boring, we did actually contact five, one of which was a verbal contact. We were not able to send a written transmittal of a invitation to bid because on the phone they refused to give that. Larry Evie Well Drilling, when we contacted, because the contact information that was listed was not accurate, we contacted them to follow up to get accurate contact information. He asked what the project entailed. He said, no, we're well drillers. This isn't the scope of drilling that we would be interested in providing, so he refused to give us the information. You know, as you can see from the efforts that we put forth, I mean, the goal on the project was 35%. You know, our total effort was 75%, so we more than doubled the goal that was put forth on this project. We felt that we did everything within our means to achieve the lowest responsive bid as a contractor. And to cover the local hiring, I know that there's been some questions as Mountain Cascade as an out-of-state contract would come up and would try and bring, you know, take away local jobs. You know, we're a union contractor. We've already worked negotiations with the local unions. They're actually here today to speak if you guys would be interested in hearing from them, that we have we've worked with them. We're going to put as many local people to work as possible. We've given the city some percentages of projections in which we feel that would come from out of state as well as would stay in state. You know, in less than half of our in-house wages that would be self-performed work are going to stay in state. Ballpark, you know, just in speaking in percentages or in dollars, you know, we intend to hire 80% of our total local labor or total labor for the job locally. For operators, 50%. For truck drivers, carpenters, between 50 to 75%. A full-time project secretary, a full-time project engineer, QC, all these things are going to come from local labor forces. As far as utilization that Mountain Cascade will be bringing out of state, this is going to be mostly from a supervision into things. Foreman, you know, a project manager, a project superintendent, nowhere near the number of employees.
Well, I actually have a question, and you're well over a minute and a half over. So if I could ask a question. So did you hear the question that I asked Mr. Hall at Moore Construction? Is he your counterpart? Were you responsible for fulfilling the requirement?
I was not the – I oversaw. Like I said, we had there was another individual that dealt with
that. That's fine. So my question is, you then are familiar with the good faith effort
– Yes, sir.
– document. And did you go to these categories on the state website and contact those that were identified in that category?
Yes, sir. That's
okay.
Correct.
And so you didn't have any idea – that there might be similarly qualified people but miscategorized in other sections of the state's website?
All of these websites that we've searched in the past, they're all set up differently. Sometimes you can find by doing other searches, cross searches.
But you did what this form
we
said.
We did what the form said.
And you had no reason to think
we
you should
We had no
done.
Reason to think that there would be other, you know,
okay.
turn up of firms.
Yeah. And I would just say to you that you suggested that Mr. Moore did this for some economic reason. Well, but of course he did. And there's no reason to respond. I would just tell you that of course he did, and that's understandable to us, and I hope you would appreciate that.
I do.
There's no need to respond. In fact, I would advise you not to respond. I'm just saying that he's exercising his right here, and we are predisposed to try to help local contractors, but we want the rules to be fair and applied equally.
So would you like to testify?
I would. Dave Ball. I'm a business agent with Labor's Local 320 in Portland. And as a taxpayer, it makes sense in these hard economic times to go with the low bidder. It's disheartening to think that we would burden the taxpayers with $700,000 or an undisclosed price for rebidding the job on it, what seems to me like a technicality. That's all I have.
Thank you all very much for your testimony today. Carla, the next three.
Did Aaron Smud speak? Thank you. Mike Zeman, Dennis Molvik, and Mark Perparish.
Gentlemen. Good afternoon. Welcome to the City Council.
Good afternoon.
You just need to give us your first and last name, and the clock will guide your available minutes left.
My name is Dennis Molvik. I'm Vice President of Northwest Boring, as well as a past president of the Washington Chapter of the National Utility Contractors Association. Northwest Boring will be performing the microtunneling work on this project, about 30% of the total dollar value of this contract. Northwest Boring has been licensed with the City of Portland for over 30 years. We are a certified MBE, we are a union contractor, and we are a local regional contractor. And when I say local regional contractor, our headquarters are in Woodinville, yet our work is regional to the Northwest. I can name over 50 projects that Northwest has done in the state of Oregon and for the City of Portland. We're local regional contractors, just as Portland contractors such as James Fowler and Gonzalez Boring, both of whom we also compete with, are local regional contractors that perform work in the Puget Sound region here as well. Northwest Boring has been a pioneer of trenchless construction for the past 56 years. We just celebrated our 56th anniversary. Specializing in tunneling, pipe ramming, EPB tunneling, micro tunneling, and auger boring. In February of 2002, Northwest Boring received the Micro Tunneling Achievement Award from the Colorado School of Mines, having demonstrated the highest level of excellence in expanding the science of micro tunneling. In April of 2003, we received the 2002 Project of the Year Award. And in March of 2006, we were a recipient of the North American Society of Trenchless Technologies 15th Anniversary Industry Award. This award recognizes our impact and innovation in the contribution of the trenchless technology industry. And I'm here today to ask you to award this contract to Mountain Cascade.
I just have one question. Did you say that you are a member of NUCA?
We are a member of the Washington chapter of the National Utility Contractors Association.
We've heard today from the Oregon and Southwest Washington chapter. Is the Washington chapter a different chapter?
It's a different chapter.
Okay, thank you.
That's interesting.
My name is Michael Zeman. I'm the president of Sheffield Northwest. We're a local drilling and shoring contractor. Given the downturn in the economy, this is a very important project for us. The only thing I'd ask is that you award it so we don't have it forced into rebid. That would force it into next year. Given the economy, it's very important to our employees that this project go forward. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, sir.
Yeah, Mark Parrish, Vice President of Parrish Excavating. We are a WBE, MBE, and ESP contractor. We were contacted by Mountain Cascade and a number of the other Generals to give them a price on doing some excavation. They've been very generous to us on talking to us, giving us scopes of work to bid on, and like you said, the economical times, we really need this project to keep us going.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate your testimony. Carla, the next three.
These are the last three I show who signed up. Mark Parrish, I'm sorry, last two. Julie Parrish, and I believe it's Nelda Wilson.
Ms. Parrish, do you want to testify, or are you just signing up to show support for your brother or your husband or whatever? Hi, Nelda.
Hi.
Welcome to City Council.
Thank you. My name is Nelda Wilson. I'm Assistant Business Manager of Local 701, the Operating Engineers, and I'm here to testify on behalf of Mountain Cascade. They are signatory with us. I realize they're from California, from Livermore, California. So is our credit union. That's where its base is, and we still have a Gladstone branch, so I don't think there's any crime there. A couple things I'd like to talk about. There was, we've talked for quite some time with this company about manning. Local 701 has a substantially long out-of-work list right now, and there are hazmat requirements on this project. We have a sufficient number of hazmat-trained people to do their self-performed portion of the excavation work. And I just wanted you guys to know that that's something that we train regularly and normally, so as part of what our training funds do. So these guys, they're paying into the local training fund. All apprentices are going to come from us. As far as the both boring contractors, they're signatory. They pay into the local funds. I really see no difference between the two in that respect. So,
ma'am, if I could just note that you do some job fairs at Memorial Coliseum.
Yes.
There was a few years ago you had a crane out front. You
had one there this year. Yeah.
You let civilians in. I want to apologize for all the damage I did to the crane and to the surrounding structures.
Okay, you got to start somewhere, right?
Into our collective psyches.
Thank you, Nelda. Jim and Jeff, I would just have some questions for you. So the concern has been raised about sort of deviation from practice versus what the words are on various sort of policy and ordinances. And can you speak to that?
I can. The state law on judging bids has always been substantial compliance, and the city code, when we've adopted our city code regarding compliance with good faith efforts, expressly says substantial performance. It's been that way in city code for a long time. That's what the words say. What I know is that whenever I've been asked to consult with the Bureau of Purchases regarding bid protests, I've also always said that the question is whether the bidder has substantially complied. And that depends on an examination of the facts on any particular case and looking at all the facts considered, how many contacts they had to make, how far off they were, and so forth. So from my perspective, the standard has never changed, has never deviated. It's always been the same. In fact, I think it's important that our standard remain consistent and that we continue to give the same consistent message to bidders that propose and bid to the city.
So have we moved contracts through the process with this level of short of absolute compliance?
We have rejected bids for not being in substantial compliance with the requirements, so I'm not sure if that answers your question.
Is this the only?
The answer to your question is yes.
Okay.
Yes, we've let other bids go through when they have been in similar situations to this.
And how do you possibly manage a system that allows for this case-by-case analysis of something called substantial compliance?
So if I could just interject at that point, because I think it's important to frame this, because
if I could get an answer to my question, then you can follow up.
I think what we try to do is, whether it was Jeff's predecessor, Sue, or Jeff, I sit down with them. We sit down with staff. We discuss each project up and down, especially when there's a protest, or even if there's not a protest, when somebody is not 100% in compliance, to try to determine that. And if you're looking for a rigid set of rules that we go by, I don't think those exist, because the circumstances of each bid varies so much. But I think as a general matter, we try to get people very, very close to the mark in order to have them be substantial compliance.
Commissioner Leonard.
And I would just say that the implication of your question, I appreciate the question, but the implication is they're applying some subjective standard to the bidders, and I guess I'm not concluding that. What I'm concluding, and I haven't heard anything to refute this, is that you gave them rules by which to identify who the subcontractors are that they were to contact. They followed those rules, which were to contact those subcontractors identified by these codes on the state website. I don't think it's reasonable to expect people then, if there are only three subcontractors listed at that code, to think beyond what the instructions are and say, well, maybe I could search a different way and find more subcontractors on this website. I mean, it seems to me that they not only substantially complied, they in fact did what the rules said they should do. So unless I'm missing something in the testimony, I'm not thinking that you applied any subjectivity in saying, well, there were five there in that code, you only contacted three, that's good enough. That's not what I understand from the testimony happened.
Yes, and I agree with that, Commissioner. And in fact, if the city were to reject Mountain Cascade, I think I would have a hard time pointing out to a judge where in the specifications Mountain Cascade was required to go beyond the NIGP code and to start searching using other methods. I have nothing to go on. I would have no written basis on which to require that.
Well, Jim, can I go one step further? Because I think Randy hits the nail on the head. And by the way, you've been practicing law all day without a license. But I have to say,
some say my whole life.
Compliment you. The document that we've been looking at is called a good faith effort. I mean, it is framed around a good faith effort. One of the issues that I'd want to know is whether there's been some bad faith, whether someone has tried to skirt the rules, whether someone's tried to game the system. It's one thing to say, here's the floor, you didn't go above the floor. And I've heard that argument here. We went above the floor, they didn't, therefore we've been harmed. I'm not sure that actually has legal significance in terms of our process. The document we're looking at says good faith effort. It directs the contractors to go to a website to comply with its obligations. But beyond that, our concerns are not superficial. We're not trying to encourage people to fax documents and then say, well, we've gone through this exercise and we're not going to contract. You've further told us that the winning bidder had a spectacular success rate in contracting with MWESB subcontractors, which goes beyond the sort of, you know, procedural justice we were seeking here to get to an outcome that is substantively what the city wants to encourage. Am I correct?
Yes, and in fact, on other projects, what we've seen is bidders try to game the system, we've asked for additional information.
As the policy manager behind writing this code, I will say that it's, regardless of the issue of substantial or not, the goal is that when we say outreach, we want the outreach.
And that's correct. And especially, there's no doubt our staff takes the time and effort at the pre-bid meetings to highlight this specifically, because we want the contractors to pay attention to this, because what we want as a result is to be able to say, we're going to award this contract, and here are the local minority women emerging small business participation.
Yeah, but we're getting close to a line here. I would hope that we don't have an argument down the road where someone comes in and says, we didn't get the winning bid, but we did contact five firms, we didn't contract with any of them. And the person that did get the winning bid only contacted two. Yes, they contracted with one of those two, but they neglected to contact three more. I think there's a certain point where it's form over substance if our intent is to get people to contract.
I passionately disagree with you.
Although that's not the case here.
It's not the case here.
No, but I passionately disagree just so that it isn't on, and we can disagree over this. This is a good faith effort, which means we are going to judge whether or not people made a good faith effort. And in this particular case, your argument is because the form, and not all of our forms say search by NIGP over the years, I know we've just had other sort of specific direction. But your point is, and Commissioner Linder's point here is that because it says search by NIGP code, that that was sort of the standard of success, the rules of engagement. Other contracts have had different sort of rules of engagement. My understanding is that's our right to do that in setting up these sort of requests for proposals. I get that. However,